this year. I don't know why. This year seems to be worse.
Well, we've had so many weird days where it's been warm and then cold and then warm and then cold.
Yeah, I know. It's like, man, you know, never had sinus issues before, but all of a sudden it's like, whoa. Wake up, you know, head's full of bleh, and eyes are watering and everything else. And it's like, it's definitely been goofy, and who knows? Hopefully it's going to get nicer and, you know, change around here for us. Not a heck of a lot happening in the news. One thing, for my story of the week, I've got a real cool video card I want to talk about later on. But right now, Bluetooth, SIGs have unveiled that they're going to Bluetooth 2.1. And what this is going to be is going to be a little bit better, less power. They're working on reducing the power. And the new specs improve pairing process. So according to Bluetooth SIGs, by reducing the number of pairing steps involved, using pairing Bluetooth 2.1 devices.
Yahoo Messenger.
My sympathy to you.
And right after that happened, I lost all my internet options. There's no more file or favorites or history. So I did a system restore back to before that day, and it didn't seem like it helped them fix the problem.
Well, 10 to 1 odds, though, he's probably hidden the toolbar. In other words, you don't see those buttons on the toolbar anymore?
I tried to right-click to find the, you know, like the history and the file, and I can't find it. Also, when I go to my control panel, there's internet options on there. It won't open.
Now, the thing that, now you're using Internet Explorer?
Yes.
Now, when you open up Internet Explorer, and up at the top where it says view, edit, or file.
That's all missing.
That's all missing, too?
Right. I can't download anything. Like, I can't download.
Sounds like it's full screen view.
Well, are there some menus there, or are the menus missing?
It's all missing.
It's full screen view.
Can you hit F11?
I haven't tried. I'm not home now to try.
Well, if you hit the F11, that takes it. That's a toggle that goes from full view to normal view.
There is a full screen mode where it intentionally removes all your window, your buttons, and your controls, so
yeah,
you can
see full screen.
You can see more of the web page on the full screen.
How come I can't download anything anymore?
You can, but you just can't get to the buttons.
Oh no! When I go to Mozilla, try to download Firefox.
Yeah,
it won't download.
What happens when you try?
Yeah, what happens?
It like freezes up.
It almost sounds like you've got a couple of unrelated problems.
You've got some other stuff going on
Not related to the Yahoo Messenger install.
And you don't know
I deleted that.
Yeah.
But you might have some other spyware in that on there.
I ran spyware, adware, crab killer. I ran my virus protection 2 or 3 times.
What version of Internet Explorer?
7?
That could be the problem, too. There's a lot of incompatibilities with IE7. We strongly recommend that you don't use any IE and switch over to Firefox. But you're in a pickle now because if you can't download Firefox.
Try rolling back, uninstall IE7, go back to 6, and then that should allow you to go back to, IE6 will then get you to Foxfire. Listen, we got to take a break. And we'll get back to the folks that are on the line. So if you got a particular question and you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get back to you right after this break.
Call Wham! High Definition Radio is on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Whiskey River, take my mind.
It's Whiskey River, because I can see the puzzled look in your face.
Yeah.
So I was just getting into Lunatic Fringe, and you turned that one off.
Yeah. You pulled the switch on us. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
You find some good ones there.
I tell you, it pays working for the biggest radio company in the universe.
There you go. Hey. Well, like I said, a few things happened there on computer world, but what's going on the Mac side there?
So. Yeah, we had a couple of big things, especially in the Mac world this week. The Apple TV box is now finally shipping. We got our first shipment in and out already.
Do you think that's going to really catch on?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It's a little different, and we're having a lot of hard time explaining it. So, and actually, what
Explain.
We're doing in one of my other hats,
Explain, Lucy.
this month's Apple Cider Meeting, which will be on the 18th. It will be the third Wednesday this month because schools are closed the second Wednesday for Easter break. So, on April 18th, we're doing an Apple Cider Meeting at East High School at 7 o'clock on the Apple TV versus the iTV. The iTV has been out for a while, a product from Elgato, and that lets you put TV on your computer. So you can watch TV on your computer, you can record TV on your computer from your antenna or from your cable. It's a lot like the TiVo, turns your computer into a TiVo. The Apple TV box is sort of the opposite. If you already have content on your computer, and the way Apple is positioning it, it's when you buy TV shows and movies from the iTunes store, Mac or Windows, watching it on your little computer screen is usually not that an appealing aspect. So what we've been able to do now is with the Apple TV box, you can plug that into your big screen TV and be able to stream the video from your computer to your big screen TV. So now when you're buying TV shows on iTunes, then you can watch them on your big TV. Or buying movies on iTunes, you can watch them on your big TV. So there's always been ways to plug your computer directly to your television. But a lot of people have their computer in one room and their TV in a different room.
Yeah, most folks, now, I don't know if too many folks have, you know, they might have I got a small TV in my computer room.
Yeah. But your big TV,
one.
You know, especially
the big
with all
TVs,
the,
yeah,
the
in
home
the
entertainment
room.
Center, in the basement with, you know, surround sound and the whole bit.
Yeah.
So the Apple TV box, either wired or wireless, is the big key here. You plug that into your big TV, and then you can stream your video wirelessly from your computer to your big screen TV. The Apple TV box also has a small hard drive in it, so it will synchronize with a computer. Actually up to 5 computers, but it's only a 40 gig hard drive. A lot of people are complaining about that.
Mm.
But it's a standard 2.5-inch SATA drive, so that can be replaced fairly easily. Probably voids the warranty, but you can replace it.
Yeah.
There's already dissections on the internet. Now, this thing just started shipping a few days ago. Yeah. But it's a really neat box if you buy a lot of content from iTunes and then want to watch that on your big screen TV.
Well, talking about hard drives and that's one thing Sony is doing right now with a lot of their laptops. You know, because right now, laptops, you know, the size of the hard drives are between usually standard 80 gig and then 100 gig, and now they're getting up to the 160s. Well, Sony said, the heck with the hard drives, and they're just putting in flash memory.
Yeah, we're seeing there's two new technologies coming on. There's combination drives, which are a typical regular Winchester-type spinning hard drive with like an 8 gig or 16 gig flash on it, which makes it a lot faster, and then your hard drive doesn't have to spin as much, which increases your battery life.
Well,
and those aren't too much more than a regular hard drive. What's really going to be exciting is the flash-only drives.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
32-gig drives, 64-gig drives.
Oh, they're talking even more than that. I mean, they put them up in pairs, and you know, you can do, you know, they'll have them up to a gig in that too-distant feature, future, because they'll be able to put some those chips, you know, stack them, in the space that used to take
used to
up for
a hard drive,
now they can stack flash chips.
And then you have no moving parts, and so
your
battery life is even longer.
You can sit there, drop it, throw it, toss it, whatever you want to do.
We're even seeing some interesting designs coming out where they're removing optical drives and putting in a second battery or a second hard drive. And there's a couple of companies that will retrofit your Mac laptops that way, too. Because a lot of people don't use optical drives anymore. You download stuff off the internet. Once you install your software, which often comes on an optical drive, you rarely need the optical drive again.
Yep.
Bringing music into the computer was typically done through your optical drive. But now with the iTunes Store and iPods, you know, there's not that big a need for that anymore.
Yep.
So we're seeing computers getting a little smaller by leaving the optical drive out. Just like they left the floppy drive out starting a couple of years ago. Making the computer smaller and then less battery usage, which gives you longer battery time by not putting these spinning devices in there.
Yep. I'll tell you what, let's go back to the phones. Next, we're going to go to Mark in Fairport. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing pretty good.
How can we help you today?
Well, quite a while back, Nick, I believe, advised a number of people to go to Eudora rather than the Microsoft email system.
Yeah, we recommend Eudora or Thunderbird.
Thunderbird. Anything but Outlook Express because of the security problems in Outlook Express.
So, the reason I'm calling, about the Eudora is that they're about to change their format where it doesn't look like they're going to even have one that you can purchase. It's all going to be like sort of advertising based.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about that?
Well, there's always been three versions of Eudora. A completely free version that has little ads in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they call a sponsored version, which was like $25-$30 that takes the ads out. And then a full commercial version that was a little bit more than that, that doesn't do any advertising. There's been some interesting changeovers in the Eudora development environment, and they're going to make Eudora completely open source now. So there's a lot of interesting things happening, and we got to see what it means for the future of the program.
Because I mean, I had gotten a note from them saying they were going to change that. I mean, I have the full version because I use it for business. I want a really good email system.
Mm-hmm.
So, for a small business, what was the other one you said? Thunderbird.
Yes.
From the Mozilla Group. It's the companion to Firefox web browser.
Okay.
Yeah, we highly recommend that. It's great.
Yeah, Nick has been using Eudora for years. He's been a beta tester for years.
Yeah.
I never liked the way it handled its nicknames and address book.
Yeah.
You had to have a nickname and a real name. You couldn't just put it under the real name.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they probably fixed that eventually, but I never stuck with it.
Yeah. I never stuck with it myself. I wound up going over to Thunderbird.
Okay, and where would I find Thunderbird?
Just go to Mozilla.com.
Or getthunderbird.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Pegasus Mail.
So I guess what I'll do is I'll stay with Eudora until they make the change, and I might change over.
Yeah, hey, see how you like whatever their new business model is, and whether it's if the ads are too obtrusive, then you can move away from it. That's one of the things that we've been talking about with Google's Gmail. It's now open to the public. You don't need an invitation anymore. They give you 3 gigabytes of mail storage space. So a lot of people like that keep their mail all the time. But the sort of insidiousness of it is they put ads in the message when you send them, which I guess isn't so bad. You know, I got to pay for it somehow.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is they're reading your message and putting a related ad in. So if you send somebody a message about the new car you're going to buy, the ad in there will be something about cars. So it's kind of an interesting logic their programs are using to put those ads in there. But it's got this real insidious nature to it.
Yep. All right. We still got time? All right. We'll tell you what. We'll go over to Brad and Victor. Brad, how can we help you, sir?
Yeah, good morning. I called last week about a 65-gig file that showed up.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I wasn't able to rename it. I finally said, okay, let's take the plunge, and I deleted it. No negative impact.
Cool.
And this morning, I did another look and found it was back and had grown to 10 gig, and I have deleted that one also. I'm not sure what's causing it.
What version of AOL do you have?
9.0.
Because it was in an AOL directory, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Inside the AOL preferences, there is a setting for how big you want your cache file to get, or your download art file. I forget what they call it now. That may be set too high, so it's going to fill up all your hard drive space. So there's this catch-22 with cache is when you go to a website, the website will download little bits of text and graphics to your hard drive, so that the next time you go back to that website, it doesn't have to download it again. And that was real popular back in the modem days because it was hard to download. Now everyone's on high speed, and the web pages change so fast, you can set your cache files down to like 5 megs or less. So look in the AOL preferences for that cache file or art file or whatever they call it now.
Okay, that's the music. We got to take a break. Brendan is in to give you all the news and views and everything else you need to know here, what's going on in Rochester. One other thing, though, you're going to want to stay tuned. I got to tell you about a program you're definitely going to want to watch this week. Because I was watching it, the first part of it, and it was really cool. And kind of shocking. Shocking in some ways. But, it's the way the high-tech world is now going these days. Because, information is so fast and so readily available. You're going to want to listen to this. So come back right after the news, and more sound bites will follow. Yeah, no, I'm enjoying a little of the music. I know. I can come back.
No, wait a minute. You always complain about the music I play.
No, not this one.
No.
Oh, it's just that Teletubbies tune.
Oh, you love that music. Stop it. Wait till you see some of the other stuff I got coming up.
Right.
I just love
One of the live recordings of this song where he's kicking the soccer ball around the stage, that's just silly.
Okay. Well, folks, you're listening to Sound Bites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And so which one of us were you playing that hot-blooded song for?
I can't tell you.
Yeah. Not me. I'm older than both of you.
Together, I think.
No. Yeah, probably. Definitely three of Rob. Anyways, one thing I want to remind folks, you know, I know we already went through this a month ago, but the one thing you might want to go around the house and check, because everybody I know listens to us and went ahead and did the patch for Windows.
For the daylight savings time.
But you might want to go around and check your VCRs.
I was going to ask you about daylight savings time. Isn't it popping up on computers now?
Right, because
yeah, it should have been today. Yeah.
Right, this morning is when the old
daylight savings time
would come into effect. So VCRs and clocks and things like that didn't have the patch for the new rule, you probably manually set them ahead a couple of weeks ago.
What a mess!
Well, today they would jump ahead again because it thinks it's daylight savings.
Well, see, the thing that is though is a lot of the older technology. You know, it's not like the Windows and all the most of computers where you can just do a patch to it. With the VCRs and all that, that's burnt into the chips. So they don't have patches.
Well,
and
some of the VCRs are now looking on one of the channels, looking for the time code being broadcast on a channel.
Yeah.
So,
but it wouldn't hurt to take a couple minutes and double check your VCRs and that type of stuff just to make sure that it didn't jump ahead another
car.
Hour.
See, the one in the car is the one I always forget. And then, you know, Monday morning, I'm an hour late for something. And
yeah, but you know, a lot
now
of
I'm going to be an hour early. You know?
Yeah, it could be 2 hours early if you haven't checked it in a while. If you've already set it ahead and it jumps ahead again, you know, you could be way ahead of yourself. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. And we got Francis in Greece. Francis, how can we help you?
Hi, Dave. I've been hearing people talking about AVG 7.5, and I use it at home. I have no problems, but I have had that coming up where it looks like it's asking that you're out of date, you know, on your virus definitions. And I have found that it comes set up in the defaults to automatically check for updates every time the computer is turned on.
And you can go in and control that. You can have it do it
and
a week.
If you're one of those people that never turn your computer off, then it never turns on, so it never checks.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But I've had no problems with it. It's been working great. And I'm on old, slow dial-up still, but...
What?
You know, for a little while longer.
Yeah.
All right.
See, and that's the other problem is that a lot of these programs almost assume these days that you're always on the internet. So the time server is going to check, your Windows is going to auto check, your antivirus is going to auto check. So you turn your computer on and it may be stuck there for 10 minutes for all these programs trying to look on the internet that hasn't connected yet.
Exactly.
Eventually, it'll come back with either an error that it couldn't connect to the internet.
Or it's sitting there in the background trying to do all the updates.
But it can look like your computer's frozen because it's waiting for an internet response that it's not going to get yet.
Right.
Or it'll make your phone dial. If you have auto dialing turned on, your phone will dial itself, which can be frustrating when you're using the phone.
Yeah, definitely slows things down.
Yep.
But no, it works great. I think it's a good program.
Yep.
Okay.
I have one. If you have time for one question,
yeah, go ahead.
About Thunderbird, I use it at work, and it takes approximately 9 seconds to delete an email. Is that normal?
Depends on how your email is set up at work. Now, are they on like an Exchange server? Or?
Yeah, it depends if it's POP mail that you've downloaded to your computer or IMAP mail that stays on the internet and you have to delete it there.
Yeah, well, I think we have a service, a POP server, like you said, and then it comes in from there.
Yeah, see, it's depending on how they're handling it.
How much mail do you keep on your computer? So I've seen people with you know, tens of thousands of messages.
I have maybe 50. Mm-hmm. You know, and
so it's not a big mail file.
You know, that drives me nuts.
It doesn't make much difference whether I delete one email at a time or 10 at a time. It
takes
9 seconds. You know,
that's all due to how they're handling it.
Okay, but I do like the way Thunderbird handles the junk mail.
Isn't that great?
Good. Yeah, that's great.
I mean, you sit there and mark it once, junk, and it's gone.
It just goes away.
You know?
Most of it goes away before I even have to read the email. I just start the email up and then, you know, just walk away for a while.
Oh, well, that's what I do. In the morning, I click mine on, and I can average, you know, a couple thousand emails just in the morning, and I see them all coming in, because that's the first thing I'll do is I'll click, get that going, because I've got like 5 email accounts, so it's downloading them all. I go get my coffee. By the time I come back, it's already, you know, checked them and shrunk it down, and I see all these emails in the trash.
Yep.
Yes!
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. All right, guys.
All right, thank you.
Thank you much. Right.
I was looking for on Thunderbird's fact list if they have a rebuild mailbox. Because 9 seconds to delete a message does seem to sound like it's too long.
But it could be the way they're scanning the emails and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because if it's out on some server somewhere else, if they're, you know, scanning that just to protect what's going out.
Right. And there's also a preference in most email programs, including Thunderbird, that when you hit delete, it doesn't really delete the message. It moves it to a trash icon.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go into that trash folder and undelete something if you like later.
Man, I saw one person talk about saving emails and all that. They had so many folders within folders within folders.
They like to save everything.
Oh, I think he had, and this is no lie, some of the original emails that he first sent from 7 years ago.
Yep. Well, there's an interesting bug in some of the older versions of Microsoft Entourage, kind of related to the Mac file system, is that there's in earlier OS 9s and OS 7s, there was a limit of a 2 gigabyte file.
Mm-hmm.
A single file couldn't be more than 2 gigabytes. So if you kept more than 2 gigabytes of mail, the file got too big and your mail would corrupt. They eventually fixed that in later system versions to 4 gigabytes. And now in the current system file, I think it's 16 exabytes. But people that used to keep a lot of mail would every 6 months or so, their mail file would get corrupted because now they have 4 gigabytes of mail saved.
Okay, well, Rob's kicking us off. He wants to play these commercials.
You know what's funny? You guys always go, oh my goodness, when somebody says they still have dial-up internet access.
Yeah, we
actually, at my other position, we actually had to go in and adjust our audio stream with a dial-up...
Filter.
No, with the dial-up stream, a 32 kilobit per second stream, because our 96 was too strong for people with dial-up. But a lot of people don't want to move outside the comfort zone of dial-up.
Right. And some people in outlying areas don't have access to high speed. Or your satellite internet is $60 a month, and that's expensive.
Yep.
You know, cell phone internet can be $80
a month. Oh, it's disgusting. Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Well... He's kicking us off, so if you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get back to you as soon as we're done listening to these great sponsors of WHAM 1180.
From 1180 WHAM.
You know who this is?
Hmm? Ford.
No.
Is it Johnny Cash or is it Joaquin Phoenix?
Johnny Cash.
Oh, see, I thought it was Tennessee Ernie Ford.
One of those really long intros.
Yeah, that's right. Johnny Cash.
Do you remember Tennessee Ernie Ford?
I remember, no.
I've heard the name.
Have you heard any?
Well, I've heard, and I've probably heard the some. You know, I don't. You know.
Yeah, he's. Never mind.
Well, there's a cool... Well, okay, go ahead.
Anyways, this is Soundbites, you're listening to Dave Enright.
Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton. The only reason that I'm
reminisce.
Familiar... Listen, the only reason I'm aware of Johnny Cash is because of the new movie out that I think is great. I think it's a great movie. But that's the only reason...
I went and saw Ghost Rider. That was cool.
That was
I saw
good.
Premonition last night. I walked out of the movie theater going... What just happened?
Well, it's weird. There must be one guy who shops all these ideas around to all the different studios.
Oh, yeah.
Because then, like, 3 movies come out with the same plot.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. Sandra Bullock one in Premonition, and then Denzel Washington in what was his Deja Vu.
Yeah.
The very same core themes. And then there was the Taye Diggs TV series, Daybreak, that did the same thing. And they never finished it. What happened? I don't know.
All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Tom in Rochester wants to talk about a huge file.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. You got a great show. Hey, I think I have a problem that one of your previous callers had, and that's a file that grows and grows until it consumes my whole hard drive.
You use an AOL?
It's connected to AOL. It's buried like 10 layers deep in the directory structure, and the file is an asprtpup.exe, and then it's got 0.1.7 PPU. And I go and I delete it regularly, but I fear that it's some kind of a virus or spyware or something that's attached itself to AOL.
And, well, it's...
There's very little out on the internet about it. A few, if you Google it, there's a few things in some discussion groups, but that's about it.
You might want to try what we suggested to the earlier caller. Go into the
cache settings.
The AOL preferences and make sure that you turn off or
reduce the number, the size.
Reduce the size of the ART database, they call it. And make sure that that's just not accumulating. But it also could be a corruption in the AOL settings that it's not deleting at 5 megabytes and just keeps filling and keeps filling the hard drive.
Yeah, the interesting thing is it's in a directory called anti-spyware. Then there's another one that says DAT, like a DAT file, and there's another one that says updates. And all these three little files sit in there in this updates folder. One of them just grows, you know.
Yeah, you've got
exponentially.
So it's growing the new update without possibly deleting the old update.
Yeah.
Well, so it's the same file, and the longer you let it go, the bigger it gets. And now I have a little shortcut on the desktop now, so I go in there and delete it constantly.
Yep.
Until I can figure out why this thing is even doing it. But really quickly, it'll get into the gig size. You know, it's multiple.
Well, that's
gigs.
What the other caller was saying too. You know, is
he found one that was 65
gigs. 65 gig.
Deleted it last week, and apparently
it grew up to 10 or 11
gigs in a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it grows fast.
So yeah, I think it's one of these things you're just going to have to
keep deleting it. We're keeping an eye on it too. It could be a bug in the AOL software. Not deleting the old cache file. Right. Well, it is a feature if it is part of the anti-spyware system. But when you download updates, it should delete the previous update. Or maybe they're doing it silly where they just append the new update to the definition table and never come out with a new update table with everything in it.
Yeah.
That maybe that might be another reason to get away from AOL.
Why not? We got time to do another. All right, let's go to Paul in Rochester. Good morning, Paul. It's still morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're here.
I have got a problem with defragmenting. When I choose to defragment.
What? One question. Okay. What OS are you running?
Windows. I'm drawing a blank here.
XP?
XP. Thank you. XP Home.
You don't have to defrag.
You don't?
No.
Oh. Well, the modern OSs, like the Mac OS and Windows XP, try to prevent the files from getting fragmented in the first place.
Unless you're,
the need is less.
Yeah, unless you're taking and putting, adding and removing a lot of programs.
We also see it in people that are doing audio or video production. You need a contiguous block of free space, and defragging works there. The problem is, and what you might be running into, is in order to defrag, every other program has to be quit. So that the defrag can have exclusive access to the hard drive.
Yep.
And that's virtually impossible on Windows because there's always some little program running in the background.
Oh,
so if you can run it in safe mode, that sometimes works. Sometimes you actually have to run it in DOS mode, which will turn off all the other programs.
Okay, as you hear by the tunes, we got to take another break. So folks that are on the line, stay on the line, and we'll get to your questions as soon as we can. What do you give me that goofy look for?
I'm a goofy-looking guy.
That's
always
his regular
goofy
look, yeah.
Oh, see, I don't stare that often over there. I'm usually busy looking at the other stuff, and it's usually Nick that's always staring at him. So don't be offended if I sit there and say...
I just listen for On News Radio 1180 WHAM.
You say that very good. You should try that as a career. All right. Oh, thank you very much. All right, folks, stay tuned. We'll be back shortly. You're killing me. Thank you. Yes, this is enough to be a sleeper. All right, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
All right.
Well, I mean, when you get to be your age, we have to be very careful when we rouse you and not to scare you.
Can you, but it won't slow me down. All right, folks, the one thing I'd like to talk about this week is, I don't know if you folks saw it on TV, but Dateline this week had a fantastic series going on about identity theft on the internet. And this week, they're going to have the follow-up. Just in a nutshell, if you don't think this can happen to you Wrong.
See, it's always been an issue. It's just the internet's making it more prevalent. Credit cards at restaurants. You give your credit card to someone at the restaurant, they walk away with it for 20 minutes.
Well, in Dateline, though, just quickly, they showed how they had created 6 credit cards, and they were offering them out into the underworld to sell them. Each credit card hit a $1,000 limit, and they'd put one up in less than 2 minutes, because this other lady was tracking it. In less than 2 minutes, that card was maxed out. And here's the other kicker. During this whole story about how some of these things are being stolen and all this, one of the guys they were talking to was right here in New York State, in Penyan, New York.
You know, it's a scary thing. I mean, when you think about it, these double scanners and things like that, there was, yep, what, TJ Maxx or whatever that company was, that,
yep,
a national thing.
Yeah, 40 yep. million yep. IDs wary. And identities have been stolen. Yeah.
Be wary of ATMs, the double scanner Rob mentioned, that someone will put a scanner in front of the real scanner. So you stick your card into what looks like the real slot. Someone has just copied all your information. They'll put a little camera in the thing and watch you type your PIN number, and then it feeds your card into the real ATM. So you get your money, so you don't think anything's wrong.
But if you folks didn't see it, you know, I don't know whether they'll recap it or not. I think it's Tuesday nights. But definitely check out Dateline, because they're going to have the follow-up now where they're going to now track. Because what it boiled down to was they also set up this scam store where people could buy on the underworld credit card, these stolen credit cards.
Didn't I read they sell for like a buck or two a piece?
Yeah. But they were
to get
there,
the number, and then they run it up.
Well, they run it up, and then they were buying stuff and having it shipped to people here in the U.S. Then they were asking those folks to then ship it off to their destination.
Well, because that's one thing that we've had a lot of problem at Jesse Group on our web stores. We'll get a dozen orders a week for the Middle East and Ukraine and the Far East. So it's really, and so we just say we don't ship internationally.
It's all off of stolen credit cards.
So now they're doing, okay, ship it to my friend in Chicago, and he'll ship it to me in Sri Lanka.
Well, this poor guy in Penyan, though, what it was is he met this lady on this dating service. And she says, oh, will you do me a favor? And, you know, promises of marriage and everything else. And she suckered him into accepting these things that were bought with a stolen credit card. And the Dateline, you know, made him realize what was going on. Now, this coming week, they're going to use his identity, his email, and track it to where he was shipping it to, and actually run in to these folks. But yeah, they post these pictures. There was one guy doing a scam, and he's promising to marry 2 women. One in Georgia and one in California. And when they both found out that they were both being promised to be marrying the same guy, how foolish did they sound? Well, you know, like I say, check it out. It's really worth it. It'll open up your eyes, folks.
And log into your bank credit card accounts. Create an online account so you can watch your credit card statements. Don't wait till the end of the month. It's too late by then.
All right. I don't know. Is Brendan coming in? But we got the news coming up. So... oh, we still got a few seconds here that I can still ramble on.
This is called in the radio business stretching.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. But seriously,
see, before the news, we have a minute.
Go back for a second. If you folks haven't seen it, though, check that out on TV this coming week, Dateline. It will really open up your eyes.
It's scary.
On how things can happen so fast, and it's going to cause you to think about other things, like Steve was saying, to check your other bank accounts and everything else. Because, you know, it's very scary out there. The internet is great, but it can also get you in a lot of trouble. So stay tuned right after the news. We'll have more news and views on Soundbites.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we got to wish, again, Nick speedy recovery. Hope he's feeling better.
He needs to get
relaxed.
Back. Well, because we're a mess. I mean, we are just absolutely just breaking all the rules today without him here. Seriously.
He's our anchor.
He's our anchor. He's
yeah. dragging us down.
No. It was Steve Ray.
What is that phrase, when the dogs away, the cats play, or something like that? Is that how it goes?
Well,
I forget.
We have fun.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. Too much fun.
Well, you know. Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what. With that, let's get right back to the phones, and we'll go to Jeremiah and Henrietta.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Last week, you guys were talking about a program to record radio off the internet.
Yeah, there are several different programs, yeah. both through Mac and PCs. Generally speaking, the radio streamers, like the AOL streamer and the Real Streamer, you can't record. So the old-fashioned solution was to put a tape recorder up in front of your computer speaker. But on the Mac, there's two programs, one called Wiretap from a local company, Ambrosia, and another one called Audio Hijack from Rogue Amoeba, although we like our local companies, yep. and Andrea was in last week. And then on the PC, Total Recorder.
Total Recorder is a very useful one. Matter of fact, I use it for other things, too.
Yeah, basically, you can record from your line in, from your mic in, or the system sounds that would come from, like, your web browser or a streaming program.
Okay, cool, because I always listen to 1180, and one of the shows that I try to catch, but it's really late at night, is the Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, a lot of shows, and including ours, will podcast yep. their audio files so that you can subscribe to them in your iTunes or other podcatcher. And then listen to them later, and it's being used like a VCR to time delay. You know, I listen to Science Friday on NPR, but oftentimes I can't be in my car, you know, on the radio Fridays at 2:00. So it's really neat to be able to podcast those. So
right,
I know Wham is podcasting a lot of their audio files. If you go to the Wham front page, and then there's a listen.
Yeah,
link
there's a whole list there, and you can yep. check it. Bob's listeners on the loose.
Nick's Entertainment Report is podcasting
is in
now.
There also. So yeah,
but three of them a day, and so that's 15 a week. That's
yeah,
that's hard
hey.
To keep up on. Yeah.
yeah.
So yeah.
Yep. The other question I had is how do you guys rate PC Cillin as far as an antivirus program?
It's okay. We still like AVG only from the standpoint that it's free and does a great job.
Okay, because I just picked it up for $22 off the internet. It's an OEM, but it's basically the same program without the box.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably illegal, because OEMs are usually stamped on it that it must be included with a new computer. So someone sold that to you illegally.
Well, I don't think it means.
Well, that's the OEM software. The right. discount is to the manufacturers that are supposed to bundle it with their computers. We see that a lot on the internet, where sometimes it is legitimate. They're selling off an old version that isn't the current version anymore.
Yeah.
But we see a lot of
depleting in inventory.
Yeah, we see a lot of illegal software on the big sale and auction sites that happen like that too. So you got to be a little careful.
So
about
give it a shot.
Legitimacy.
See how it does. I mean, you know. Worst case scenario, you know, you can always dump it and go to AVG, which is free, so you won't have to shell out any additional money. Right?
That's always nice. Yeah.
yeah.
I'm just trying to see. How do you yep. spell Jeremiah?
It's gone. All right. Tell you what. Let's go to Steve in Rochester. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Hi. I have one of our machines is an older Mac that uses 9.2. And when I'm working on Outlook Express, when I look at my mail and I get the attachments, sometimes it freezes. Now I used to get a message about Acrobat Reader. I know I'm using an old Acrobat Reader, but now it just freezes.
When you open the attachment or when you view the message that has an attachment?
No, when I open the attachment.
And what type of attachment is it?
It's I'm not sure, but before it was an Acrobat Reader, and I got a message saying the Acrobat Reader was old. But
so,
now it just freezes.
So you're trying to open a PDF file. Basically, you have to know what type of file it is that's coming in, so that you know what type of program to open it with. And
okay.
Acrobat Reader is up to version 8 now, but only for the current systems. If you have an older version of Acrobat, maybe 5 or 6, there was actually 6 had a big issue where it would take a very long time to launch. And a lot of people would think their computer's frozen, especially viewing a PDF inside of a website. It could take several minutes for Acrobat to launch in the background and then display the PDF. So a lot of people skipped 6 and stayed with 5. But if it is a PDF file you're trying to open, one of the things you can do is, if it's still available, is try to re-download the Acrobat Reader 5 and reinstall that.
Oh, I see. I see. So really, I'm going to be looking at Acrobat 5 or Acrobat 6.
Well, whatever the latest version was for your OS 9, I don't remember if 6 required OS 10 or not. But Reader 5 was very clean and very quick to open. But it's also 3 or 4 versions out of date now. So people creating PDF files these days may not be including that backward compatibility. And that could also be why it's freezing trying to open.
If he's got an old version and trying to open up newer stuff, he's going to have an issue.
When people create the PDF file, there is an option for backward compatibility and how old a version you want to make your PDF compatible with, which will make the PDF file bigger because it has to put all the older code in.
I see.
So a lot of people, if you're creating a PDF with Acrobat 8 or Acrobat 9, they may only go back to 7.
I see. So it's not, sometimes it's not me.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it is you in a sense that if you've got an older version and somebody else has something newer, you can't read it.
Right. PDF was intended to be a universal format that anyone could read. But now we're running into versioning issues and on the older operating systems that can't take a newer version of the Acrobat Reader, there's sometimes a problem like that.
Yep.
You also might want to look into some other PDF readers. What's the other one? GoScript, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's several other PDF readers that you might be able to try rather than Adobe's own.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Tell you what, we'll go to our Roger in Rochester. Go ahead, Roger.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thank you
for taking my call. I have Windows XP Home. Now, on Windows 98, you could reboot. There was when you get ready to shut down, there was a button that said reboot to DOS or shut down. How do you do that with XP?
You don't.
There is no DOS in XP.
There is no DOS. DOS died when FAT32 went away.
Okay.
There is something similar to DOS called command line only.
Yeah.
If you when the PC starts booting, if you start banging away at the F8
key,
you'll get into a text menu where you'll have safe mode networking and safe mode command prompt, and that will take you into a window with only a command prompt, which is almost DOS but not really DOS.
Right.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with the F8, and I've been in the safe mode, but I never paid attention. So there is a place that you can arrow down to DOS mode or something
Well,
like
command,
that.
Well,
it's not DOS.
It says command prompt only, which most of your DOS commands will work, but it's still, technically it's running Windows at a command prompt without loading the graphical interface on top of it. And as we had mentioned that earlier to Paul, who was trying to defrag, that you can't defrag in full Windows mode. You might have to go to safe mode, and sometimes even safe mode won't defrag, and you have to go to command line
only.
What
are you trying to get into DOS to do?
Well, I was just basically, I heard you talking to the other guy about it, and I thought to myself, I don't know how to get into DOS. And so actually, really nothing at this moment,
mm-hmm.
but I was just mainly curious.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's for the most part gone.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me.
I guess you answered my question then.
All righty. Man.
Yep. Well, it's a subtle difference. It's a command line. It isn't DOS, but all your DOS commands work. Well, most of your DOS commands work, but it's still running Windows. And oftentimes you have to do that, especially defrag. And in fact, it's what is it? Scan disk slash
forward slash repair.
Yeah, was it once now? Slash now we'll run it now.
Slash
once will tell SanDisk to run the next time you reboot Windows before it loads the GUI.
Well, the safe thing for anybody, if they're going to do any DOS commands in a window, you know, a DOS window, is always type the command /?, and it will always tell them what the variables are to use.
Right, the parameters.
The controls. All right, tell you what, let's go to Mary in Honeoye Falls. She's got a Mac question. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay, I have two questions. One is about a Mac. I'm trying to download some MP3s off of websites and bring them into iTunes. And when I do that, I want to put them on my iPod. But when I drag them to the iPod, it says, sorry, you can't play these on your iPod. And I don't understand why that is.
Oh, you're sure they're MP3 files?
They are listed as MP3 files. The only thing I can tell you is that in the iTunes menu where you look at the screen, the window, they are little, they look like podcasts, little, you know.
Oh, the radio streams.
Yeah.
Right. You can't transfer those to an iPod because they stream directly from the internet.
Okay. But that they you still don't call them MP3s.
It's probably an M3U, which is the suffix for an MP3 stream. So it plays the file off the internet. It never actually exists on your computer.
But I can, if I double-click on it in iTunes, I can play it.
Because it's playing through the internet.
It's
not on your computer.
Not on my computer. Is there any way I could change that, like download it to a CD?
No. But you can use a program like we mentioned earlier, Audio Hijack or Wiretap, to record that audio stream into your computer.
And save it for a file.
And
that you
save
can
it as a file you can put on your iPod.
Okay. Then that's what I need to do.
Yep.
All right. The second question relates to a Mac PC question. I'm trying to share a screen and a mouse with a PC and a Mac, the monitor and the mouse.
Yep.
And on the PC, of course, it wants me to right-click. I can't right-click, and I'm wondering what the keystroke equivalent for right-clicking on the PC would be, because I haven't been able to find it anywhere.
You need a two-button mouse.
Yeah.
I have a two-button mouse. I have actually a five-button mouse, but it's programmed for the Macintosh.
You need to
I'm not right-clicking it. I'm not using right-click on that mouse.
You have to, the right button on the mouse should automatically be a right click under Windows. You may have to download the control software for that mouse from whatever brand mouse it is.
Right.
But usually left click and right click are pretty much standard on every mouse. It's the extra buttons that you would have to program to do, open a program or
scroll
something.
Back
on the Apple mouse, you get the expose feature and the dashboard feature. That would have to be programmed separately on the PC.
Okay. So there's no keystroke equivalent then on the PC?
Nope.
No.
Because there is a keystroke equivalent, you know, on the Mac.
Well, on the Mac, control left click sends a right click function to the program. But on the PC, since every PC mouse has had a right button for a long time, there isn't really a right click function. Although every right click menu that pops out is available from the regular menu bars as well.
Okay, hopefully that helps. That's the music. We got to take a short break, so if you're on the line, stay on the line, and we'll get back to you right after this short news and views. And no,
it's our news and views and things you can use.
Whatever. I'm easy. I'm sitting there trying to fight off this stupid sinus infection and that sound nasty. All right, you're listening to Soundbites, and we'll be right back, folks.
Call them.
You guys are such a motley crew in there. You're just like all the, you know, head bopping like this. You're like, yeah.
Well, welcome back, folks. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to Soundbites. One thing I got to tell you. I discovered this new video card out. It's by GeForce, and they're called the 8800.
Yeah, the NVIDIA. In fact, NVIDIA is going through this huge shakeup now that AMD bought ATI, the other big video company. Yep. So now all of AMD's computers are going to have ATI chips in them. So NVIDIA just lost a huge source of revenue.
But these two video cards out, I mean, the low-end model is starting out with 320 meg of memory.
Yep.
And the other one, the other higher end one, which is going close to $1,000, is loaded with 768 meg of memory.
Yep.
You want to talk about a serious gaming card.
Yeah, Apple. In fact, I mean, that was one of the ironies we ran into, that Apple, as a custom order, you can add this 8600 card. I think it is the predecessor to that one. It's nearly $2,000 for this video card, but it has a stereoscopic output on it. So you can plug into a stereo monitor and actually see a three-dimensional view. Really great for CAD work.
This new card literally takes up two slots.
Yeah, a lot of them are doing that. In fact, Apple's new Mac Pro, the first slot where you usually put your video card, they've spaced it out so that it doesn't block a slot. Because a lot of these high-end graphics cards will block the slot next to it.
Yeah, because of the fans and everything else they got to put on them.
Yep.
So if you want to... if you're seriously into gaming, you're going to want to check out the new GeForce set of cards, because they look sweet.
What is it, a trillion polygons per second? Some ridiculous number?
Probably more than the human eye can see anyways. All right, let's tell you what. We'll go back to the phones and we'll talk to Ed in Canandaigua. Ed, how can we help you today, sir?
Hey, guys. Thanks for the program. Thanks for all your help.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a Sony Media Center tower that I bought new in May of 05.
Mm-hmm.
It's running Media Center, and it came with 2002 operating system, which I've kept up to date with the updates and Service Pack 2 and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using Frontier's DSL security package, you know, because they put it in there with the service, and I do the security tingle about once a week.
Okay.
I've got my settings to prompt me when there's updates for Windows security stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been prompting to do the Internet Explorer 7 update.
Okay.
And I read the warnings and everything before I did it. And it said it wasn't going to change the settings, blah, 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 and it did.
You believed them?
And it's also it's also incompatible with a lot of other software.
Oh, matter of fact, QuickBooks. The minute 7 came out, QuickBooks came out and said, do not, under any circumstances, use IE 7, because it will corrupt your data.
So IE itself may work, but your toolbars, like the Google toolbar, the Yahoo toolbar, a lot of other things won't work.
Icons off the desktop disappeared, and I think there's stuff, when you look in the ad remove program display, I think there's even things in there that have changed. For instance, like my ATI video card that came in the computer, it shows there's no size of megabytes for that.
Well, when you downloaded it, when you downloaded all those updates, what you might have also done is, if there were any hardware updates, you might have downloaded those accidentally and put those in too.
Okay.
One thing you can do is, one, go into the Ed Remove programs, uninstall IE7.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Do I turn
just go into the Ed Remove and uninstall that, and that'll put you back to pre-IE7 settings.
Okay, don't go to the restore.
No, I'd first get rid of IE7.
Okay.
Because that might, you know, if you don't do that first, trying to go to back to a restore point, because of the way IE7 really changes the operating system, can mess things up, I've seen from time to time.
Okay. I'll give it a try, guys. I didn't know which one to try first, and I'm a little gun-shy at this point.
Yeah.
Well, and then,
it changed so many things.
And in that software update list that pops up for everyone else now, or after you uninstall IE7, it's going to come back to you. There is an option. You check the little plus sign, which brings out more options, and there's a never this update again.
Yep, never ask me again. All right, tell you what, let's go on to Bob in Greece. Bob, how can we help you today, sir?
Morning, gentlemen. Kudos to the music director. My wife is...
We're still teaching him.
Well, he's learning well. On my wife's computer, she runs Thunderbird and Firefox, and on mine, I run just the regular Mozilla browser and the Mozilla email.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I can't do any online banking through Firefox. I have to use the Mozilla, just the regular browser. Do you know why that would be?
What happens when you try?
Yeah.
It just doesn't go any. It just starts up and just stops.
What version of Firefox are you using?
The 7.005 or 0.2 or whatever it is, the newest one that's out.
2.003 is the current version.
Go.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
One of the problems I've seen with Firefox is that it has automatic, well, not problems. One of the features is the automatic pop-up blocking. And we see that frequently in web email and in banking, when you try to log into your bank, it pops up a window of the, to log in with, or after you log in, it will pop up a new window with your information in it.
Right, and that's the, where it never gets to.
The pop-up blocker is blocking that pop-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you can temporarily turn off pop-ups, or what you may see is in the top of the Firefox window, a little yellow line saying...
Banner. It's like a banner across
right,
the top.
Right, we blocked a pop-up window. Click here to allow that pop-up window to come in. Yeah.
And that would always come in for that site then? Or I'd have to do it each time?
Well, I think
you
one,
might
of the,
be able to
one of the options
the
is to remember for this site or yeah, always allow pop-ups from this site.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts over the regular Mozilla browser as opposed to Firefox? Or apparently not too many people use that.
Well, Firefox and Thunderbird get updated more often.
Yeah.
One of the main differences is that Mozilla is a single program that tries to do everything.
Well, and sort of like the Netscape.
The old Netscape was, yeah. And then Firefox and Thunderbird are separate programs that each do their one thing, but they can still talk together. Some people like to do everything in one program to see their mail and their web and their news, and some people like separate programs for it. So it's really a personal decision.
Yeah.
But the Firefox and Thunderbird tend to get updated more frequently.
All righty. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Let's go to Ken in Arundhati. Ken, how can we help you?
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
We're up and moving. That's half the battle, they tell me, especially at my age.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I'm getting ready to upgrade a computer to Vista 64-bit. I've yanked the old hard drive out, and I'm putting in a new hard drive, and
mm-hmm.
I'm looking for compatible applications. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm looking for is a antivirus software.
AVG.
Yeah.
Well, he said a key thing there. You've got two problems. One is finding things compatible with Vista, and an even smaller list of things is things compatible with Vista 64-bit.
AVG, as far as I know, I mean, I'm running, I've got the Vista Ultima running that in box right now, and I'm running AVG with it.
That
64-bit, though, yeah, that might...
Yeah, check on AVG's website. I'm going there now. Our internet's really slow here today.
Now, the other question for you, though, you said you're doing all this updating. How much memory do you have in the machine?
Oh, plenty. I have 2 gigabytes of memory.
2 gig?
Yep.
Okay, you're good there. What about video?
It's a NXT 1600 with 512, so I'm good. An 8 gig.
Whoa.
Yep.
You're really building a kick-butt machine.
Well, actually, that's a
this
pretty...
This is the way to do it,
that's
though.
A pretty bare-bones machine, though, for,
yeah, but
for high-end Vista.
But 2 gig and, I mean, 512 meg memory, video memory. That's just video memory. That's separate, folks, is what we're talking about here. And those are some of the specs that you're going to need, along with a dual-core processor and plenty of disk space.
Yeah, it's an Athlon 64X to 4800.
So. Yeah. One of the things, though, Ken, I've found... The biggest issue is going to be finding drivers for a lot of the other hardware and that's out there.
Yeah, I've always
because they're still slow to come out.
And
with
it's hard enough with Vista, and even harder with Vista 64.
Yeah, I had to order a brand new wireless card for it, also. But everything else is pretty much supported. It's just that I've noticed I have been using the antivirus that you can get for free with Time Warner, the Computer Associates suite,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have a 64-bit.
Tell you what, check out both AVG and another one is Antivir. If you do a Google search on Antivir, those two companies, you know, both AVG and Antivir, tend to get stuff out a little sooner. I mean, matter of fact, AVG had virus software out there for Vista before actually Norton and McAfee had their beta versions out and had them running. So check those two out and see how you make out with them. All right, tell you what, let's go next to Dave in Henrietta. Oh, he's got a good one here.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great.
I've got a quick question for Steve. On upgrading from an old computer that's still running 9.2 to, a G5, the getting addresses from Outlook Express over to Address Book, I see that there's a Apple script that's available to import from Outlook.
Right, but you need to be able to run Outlook on the new computer. If you're getting an old G5, then you can still run OS9 software in the G5, but if you're getting a new Intel machine, you can't.
So is there any way, because it's two separate boxes, can I? Yeah, I can't run Outlook Express in the G5, right?
You can, yes, in the OS 9 classic layer.
Ah, but I have to have OS 9 installed.
It comes with the G5 as a separate installer. If you don't have that many addresses, what you can do is export from the old computer, and you get a text file of your addresses,
yep.
And then either copy that through your network or email it to yourself or something like that, and then import that into the new Apple Address Book program.
Oh, just as a text document?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you have a lot of mail, you know, hundreds and hundreds of messages or hundreds of addresses, then it can be easier to import directly. One of the other tricks I found is that the Macs come with a demo of Microsoft Office, or you can download a 30-day demo, and you can transfer your Outlook identity to the new computer, either again through network or file sharing or the CD sharing, flash drive, anything like that. And then Entourage will import that Outlook identity as an Entourage identity. And then from there, you can import it into the Apple mail and address book programs if you don't want to buy Entourage.
Well, let me ask you, through Migration Assistant, if I...
Migration Assistant won't work with OS 9. The old computer has to be running OS 10.
Okay. That's okay, because, in fact, you installed for me OS 10 on a second hard drive on the old computer. I could boot up the OS 10 drive in that, you know, which is still running 10.2, I think,
that might work. Well, it will migrate the Outlook identity folder. I don't think it will import. No, you'd still once you run Apple Mail on the new computer,
yeah.
You'd have to import from Outlook Express running in Classic on the G5. But if you're getting a new computer and not an old G5, then you can't run Classic anymore.
Yeah, it's an older G5.
Yeah.
So it won't work just pointing to the, because it says in the Apple script when I try to run it, point to the Outlook Express. So
right.
It won't work if it's on a backup drive.
Running. It will, but Outlook Express has to be running
in
order to migrate the mail.
Yeah.
And so it can be running from a second drive in the Classic layer. If you have Classic running.
Well, it's not the mail I'm worried about. It's just the addresses.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the addresses. Outlook has to be running.
Okay.
So it's often easier just to export them on the old computer and then import them on the new computer.
Okay. As a text file.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Hey, they never said it was going to be easy, but remember,
yep.
Macs are a lot of fun to work with.
Well, one of the annoying things is when you're migrating from an old OS to a new OS.
Yeah.
There's always
going to be issues,
right.
And I mean,
and so that's one of the Entourage tricks that's nice. You got the demo of Entourage, so you can migrate your mail into the Apple programs without buying Entourage. You can use that 30-day demo,
yep.
And it will migrate the mail and the addresses.
All right, tell you what, let's go on to our next caller, and that's Lance in Rochester. Go ahead, Lance. How can we help you today?
Hi, Cruz. I run AVG constantly. Do I need also to run the parts of the Tango?
Yes. AVG is just an antivirus.
Right. You should use the Adaware and SpyBot. And AVG will automatically run in the background. So
yeah.
You really don't even have to run anything there. Once it's installed, it'll run automatically. The other two programs that you've got to run manually, though, is the SpyBot and the Adware.
Right. You need an anti-spyware program, too. And SpyBot is SpyBot? AdAware and SpyBot are two other programs from the Security Tango. And we're also starting to hear good things about AVG's own anti-spyware program
as well.
Well,
that's what I've done is on the Soundbite CD, I have dropped Stinger. And
that's
put
almost
the AVG
unused, yeah.
Spyware program on there because Stinger is no longer needed. And with that, folks, let's go to a short break and we'll get back to you. And those couple of folks that are still on the line waiting to have their questions answered, stay on the line. We'll get back to you right after this news flash. Our journey. Eminem.
That's not right. That is not. You are not allowed to listen to Eminem.
Did you hear why the blonde got fired from the Eminem factory? Throwing out the W's.
You're listening to Soundbites.
I don't even have my
folks.
Rim shot ready for that.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Oh, boy. Well, you see, well, you'd be surprised if you were at our shop, because we, you know, being a diverse group in age, listen to a wide variety of music.
Well, you've got somebody in there younger than me, right? Dan? He's younger than me, right? Or is he my age? I think he's younger than me.
How old are you?
27.
Yeah, he's
younger. You're old.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, mark down your calendars. We're going to have a big 30th birthday party when Rob gets really old.
I started here when I was 18 at WHAM. It's crazy. It's been a long time.
So you're coming up on 10 years.
How long you guys? I know. maybe I'll get the pin. How long have you guys been here now?
I think for five years.
5 years, yeah.
We've been doing the show for
5 years.
Yeah, we've been doing the show for 17 years.
Huh. And you've been with Wham for five. Didn't you guys start in the summer, right?
No, we started December 1st.
Oh, here.
Okay.
Yep, we started here December 1st.
December.
Wow. Yep. Seems like just yesterday.
Hey, when you're having fun, time does go by fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just enjoy it. And with that, tell you what, we'll share our fun in that with Ben from Fairport, who's got a G4 laptop hard drive problem. Go ahead, Ben.
Good morning, guys. I was at WHAM when they had an 807 beam power pento tube. When it used to be a 10-watt station, so.
10 watts, wow.
That's shouting distance. You just get on the top of Mid-Tower and scream.
That's right. Hey, I don't know, hay is for horses, I know, sorry. I have a G4 laptop, which I've been in love with since 2003. In 2005, the SuperDrive, whatever, croaked, and I took it to the new Apple store, and I had a partial warranty card. And they actually replaced it, the whole thing. They actually had to do it twice. But I was curious about the hard drive, that isn't the same as the SuperDrive, is it?
Well, the SuperDrive is the optical drive, the CD burner, DVD burner.
Okay. So is it like, should you have the hard drive changed out every 4 years or something?
There's no general need to. You want to have a good backup just in case the drive fails. Yeah. The big annoyance is always these drives fail at the most inopportune moments.
Yeah, when you don't want them to.
They know you have a deadline, so you want to have a
huge
backup.
Huge presentation, your job's on the line.
Dry, you've got a thing for court.
You can put a bigger drive in if you've run out of space.
Can one of you guys upgrade it to, I think it's a 40 gig, no, it's an 80 gig drive in there.
Yeah, technically you can't upgrade it, but you can pull that one out and put a bigger one in, because there's only one bay in a laptop.
Right.
And then you can make that old drive an external drive by putting it in a chassis.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Laptop drives are kind of expensive because they're physically small.
Yeah.
But you can put a bigger drive in. I think we just quoted a 200 gig drive is $200 on a 2.5 inch laptop drive. Yeah.
Well, that's where, like you said, more and more folks are going to IDE or SATA external hard drives.
Okay. Or FireWire on the Mac.
Because they're so much cheaper.
Okay.
It's about half the price for double the capacity.
Yeah. And plus they're more reliable, say, than on tapes.
Yeah.
You know, folks that were doing the old tape backup and all that.
Yeah, backing up, finding a backup medium, the most common way now is to back up to a hard drive. Okay. You can back up to CD or DVD, but then you got to break it down into 4 gig chunks to fit on a DVD, and it might take 100 disks, to 10 disks to back up your 40 gig drive.
Yeah. All right, whereas if you got like a 320 gig hard drive, and had that to back up, you
which
wouldn't
is
even
small
have
these days.
Yeah, which you wouldn't even have to compress it.
All right.
You know, if you got an 80 gig hard drive, you could have multiple volumes on this 320 gig hard drive and not even compress it. So, you know, there's a lot of options out there.
And then the other thing to think about too is look at how much you're putting into upgrading the model versus getting a new model.
Yep.
It's really nice to be able to upgrade your computer and add more stuff to it, which spreads out the payments. Basically, you buy one thing this year, one thing the next year. But what you end up often doing is you're paying more than the new machine would cost if you just saved that money toward a new machine.
Yeah.
Because they've been getting
so cheap
these days.
Yeah, nickel and diming you know.
Yeah.
You got to look at it. All right, let's go to Joe in Rochester. Joe, how can we help you today?
Hey guys. First of all, I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I have an HP, and when I purchase it. I have the, you know, HP programs on the computer,
mm-hmm.
and I do have the CDs, but I had one of the programs called the HP Director.
Yeah, that's for controlling the printer and all that?
Yeah.
Yep.
For some reason, it doesn't want to come up now, and it's either been deleted or by accident by, you know, somebody or whatever.
What's been done to the machine lately?
What's that?
What have you done to the machine lately?
Nothing really.
Did you do any of the Windows updates?
I've tried to on some, but I really haven't done much really updating.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is re-download the printer driver for whatever model your printer you have, and that director will come back because it's part of the printer driver.
But I've seen some issues, though, with that. Again, going back to IE7,
yeah.
that this HP director, because it controls the scanner and everything else, has been an issue. So you might want to look into that, make sure you don't have IE7 in there. But, Joe, if you still have an issue with that, tell you what, email me. That's dnwright@nwrightpc.com, and I might be able to help you with this because I think I got another email on that same issue. So, again, you know, if you can't do it that way, throw me an email. And with that, we got to take a short break, so stay tuned, folks, and we'll be right back to Soundbites. Bob Marley.
Ooh, yeah.
Bob Marley. That's a good one. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Y'all, Mon.
Mon, yes.
Yes, Mon.
Matter of fact, tell you what, well, we still got a few minutes. Let's go right to Dick in South Bristol, who has an answer, which this is the part of the show I love, to that gentleman's problem with the HP Director. Go ahead, Dick.
Hi. I had HP Director on several of my computers, and then they, all of a sudden it stopped. They stopped working. And I found it. The answer, if you go to the HP website,
yep.
they have a fix. If you've loaded Internet Explorer 7, that's the guy that stopped it.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
So now, see, that doesn't make any technical sense at all. Why would a web browser mess up your print driver?
Well, it's Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
Enough said. Amen to that.
Well, that's all I have.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I should also mention I found a couple of links for our. We had two callers today with the giant multi-gigabyte file in their AOL anti-spyware.
Yep.
That appears to be a wild file growth cancer. No. I posted a link on our website for a solution that somebody found. Basically, uninstalling the AOL anti-spyware. Deleting the file, reinstall the anti-spyware, and then open the firewall exception.
Or just don't use the spyware program. Use what we recommend.
Yeah, use a different one.
It doesn't grow those big files. Hey, well, let's try to quick slip in John from Leroy. John, how can we help you?
Oh, yeah. I want to back up my XP because I got a new computer with Vista on it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I load it into Vista?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there's an automatic file settings and transfer wizard that you can use.
Yeah, that's the one. Matter of fact, I always tell folks, if they want to, you know, really back up a lot of their settings and emails and everything else, and they're running XP,
uh-huh.
what they do first is create a directory called, say, data transfer.
Okay.
And then you run the file and transfer settings program.
Okay.
And you save it to that folder.
All programs, system tools, accessories, something like that.
And what you do is you save that file to that folder.
Uh-huh.
And then burn that folder to a CD or a DVD, depending on what it needs, size-wise.
The wizard can run in two ways. You can network your two computers together and transfer directly, or you can collect all the files into either a share folder or a burn to a CD, and then on the new computer, run the wizard again and say import from this CD.
But it's a good way to back up everything. Right now, it's the fastest and easiest way to back up all your documents, all your songs, your desktop settings, your email settings, your emails, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got hit with lightning the other day, and my computer didn't go down, but that modem got nailed.
Oh,
yeah. Well, we're moving into thunderstorm season, and we've had our first thunderstorm.
That wasn't a thunderstorm. That was a flood.
Well, yeah, there was a little. In fact, I saw some lightning driving in today over downtown. But yeah, start being wary. A lot of people will have surge suppressors on their computer, which is good, but you need a little more than that. You need the a lot of surge suppressors will have a telephone line connection on it. And if you're running DSL, put your telephone through there. And some of the better surge suppressors will have a coax line on it, so you can run your cable router through it, or your they'll have an Ethernet jack, so you can run that through it. Because a lot of the spikes and surges will get in through your DSL line or your cable line, get into your computer and blow your computer that way.
Yeah, like you said, you got to be careful. And the other key thing, though, on that same note, though, is once it trips it, it's worked.
Right.
And if it's popped.
Yeah, that's the $10, $20 surge suppressors are a one-shot deal.
Yeah, and then folks will sit there and hit the reset button and think, oh, it's good again. No, once it's protected you on those cheaper ones, it's popped and protected your machine. You know, you're done with it,
and
folks.
And if you really want, you know, spend the $100, you can get a really decent UPS that has a battery in it. Will keep your computer running when the power fails, or when the power fails, lets you shut down normally. Those are really good.
Okay, that is going to do it for another week of Sound Bites. Nick, hope you're feeling better, buddy. You know, get well soon. Hope to see you next week. And that's going to kind of wrap it up for Sound Bites for this Sunday, April Fool's. You got Dave Enright and Steve Ray, along with Rob Litton. See you next week.